The first person we have is, well, everyone knows this game, everyone's played Super Meat Boy, that needs no introduction. But you may never have seen him in person, Tommy Refinis, ladies and gentlemen. And we're going to talk a bunch about the controller stuff, but before we get to that, I kind of wanted to start off by saying I don't even know, really, much of the history of pre-Meat Boy. So pre-Meat I had a bunch of questions I want to ask about Meat Boy, and the first thing I wanted to find out was, how do we get to Meat Boy? Like, where are you in your life at the time when you're like, hey, what is, you know, we're going to do this project together, right?
Okay, so I'm sick, so. Well, not sick, but.
Cough just as much.
Yeah, no, I'm gonna make sure everybody's got something to take home.
You want
to
aerosol that.
Yeah. So, back in 1999, 2000, there was a site called Newgrounds. I think most people know about Newgrounds, I think. And on Newgrounds, I made terrible Flash games and terrible Flash animations, and so did Edmund. And we sort of met up, and then we both went our separate ways. I went and got into web development stuff, PHP crap, MySQL. I wrote real estate databases, which sound really boring, but
really?
That was a lot of fun. Yeah. So, you know, like,
okay.
You know Zillow?
Yeah.
And how they show everybody's listings?
Yeah.
That's actually called broker reciprocity.
Okay.
So that's a thing where every agent can grab the listings and sell other agent stuff, and they get like percentages, blah, 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 all that stuff. But the complicated fun problem with that is all MLS systems are stupid and none of them are centralized. So my first actual job, aside from little contract jobs here and there, was writing real estate database software that took like five different databases in Western North Carolina and integrated them into one searchable thing. That was my job. That was like when I was 20. And that was super fun.
That's crazy. I had no idea.
Yeah. And it was, in Western North Carolina, they had just introduced it. And I was this new programmer, the only programmer at this little web place that was managed by this moron. And,
this is being recorded.
Yeah, no, he's a moron and he knows he's a moron. I'm not going to say I won't say his name. I could say his name.
No, it's up to you, man.
His name's Blake Butler. You're never going to find him.
Okay.
But, so that was my job, and that was sort of, MySQL, PHP stuff. And during that whole time, I always was trying to make my little game engine. And I had Flash, so that was mainly what I was making stuff in and trying to make like a game engine sort of things in Flash, just sort of tinkering around. But my day job was always just, you know, web stuff, this and that. And then after that job, I moved to Charlotte. I was in Asheville. I moved to Charlotte and got a job at a place that was doing educational, like almost games, but they were like an educational portal. And that was just dealing with hundreds of thousands of users. So mainly my life was all database stuff and building applications for people, like teachers and stuff.
So how do you get from that to, because Super Meat Boy is all written like in C++,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it's.
So how do you get from that as what you were doing to like, I'm going to build a whole game engine myself using none of these things, not using Flash, not using
yeah.
Is it right? What did that process look like? How did that mental
so
process
how that happened was as I was doing all that work, I was doing a bunch of contract work, and I was doing stuff for like Duraflame and NASCAR, like just and I would just spend all my time doing all this work that was fun for my brain, but not for the creative fun part of my brain. And one day I was reading an EGM. And Electronic Gaming Monthly, I don't even know if that exists anymore. But they did an interview with the guy that was coding the fishing minigame in Twilight Princess.
And, okay.
And he was doing it, actually it wasn't an interview with him, it was an interview about Twilight Princess, but they had this little thing. And the reason there was a fishing minigame in Twilight Princess is because this one programmer loved fishing. And in his off time, he made the phishing minigame.
Okay.
And I read that and I went, I make shit for Duraflame. I don't want to do this anymore. So around that time.
This also because of your shared passion of phishing?
Fishing, okay. And my hatred of Duraflame. Yes.
Okay. Understood.
They have a weird slogan, by the way, Duraflame.
What is their slogan? Is that the log?
Like
you put it in the fireplace and you light the log on fire?
Yeah.
It's not really a log. It's like compressed post-processed materials of some
kind. Yeah. It's a really stinky, like gasoline log is what it is. Right. But it works. It burns for a long time. But their slogan, when I saw it over Thanksgiving, it's something like, tonight's the night. It's something really weird. Like, okay.
Amazing.
Yeah. So okay. After my friend had gotten a job.
Because nothing's more romantic than a giant
hey, baby.
Gasoline.
Hey, baby, let's pop that Duraflame and let's make some sparks. Yeah. That's how I met my wife. It was over a Duraflame log. Yeah.
So it works.
Yeah.
Good news.
So my friend had got a job at a company in Amsterdam. It was also managed by morons. This is a weird trend for me.
That's management.
They needed a network programmer. And I hadn't done much C++ in a long time, like little bits here and there. And I did an interview with them, and I convinced them that I knew C++ well enough to get the job.
All right.
And so I learned a lot of C++ on the plane to Amsterdam. And then I got there and learned more and more and more, and was able to learn fast enough that they couldn't catch me.
Okay.
Yeah. And from there, I was like network programmer, and then I worked up to like lead engine programmer, because we weren't building our own engine. We were basically taking the Unreal 2X engine and porting it to 360.
Got it.
Which 2X was terrible because it was a hack on Unreal 2.
Okay.
And then to take that to 360 was crazy. But I was doing all these command buffer optimizations and all this stuff to make it like actually they, oh my God, they had, their artists have no concept of what hardware can do.
Okay.
So this was an Xbox 360 and they had models with fingernails that were model geometry and textures that were four zero nine six by 4096.
Well,
for their face.
Okay, there's no way to get the emotions.
Yeah.
Without those.
Yeah.
I mean, you've seen the videos.
Yeah.
Right? You need the fingernails are part of the acting.
The best part though is the characters were never more than this big on the screen.
Well, you know.
And I had constant
fights
with them.
The emotions in there, even if you can't see it, it's coming out through the.
Yeah. Yeah. So like IGN's like, oh, it was a great game, especially the fingernails. Oh my God, those were great.
Fingernails 10 out of 10. Did they add a new fingernails rating?
I did a whole fingernail shader. It was amazing. Yeah.
Okay.
But that's where I was like, I was all into like the optimization stuff.
Okay,
I was
so you actually had a lot of time where you were doing C++ engine work.
Oh yeah.
So it was, okay.
Yeah, like that was like my whole job was make sure this shitty game called Hoop World that eventually came out, but not on 360, make sure, but make sure it runs at 60 frames a second. And that was my job. And that was like, I was doing all sorts of fun stuff. Like, I was trying to figure out a way to make animation textures where it would encode the matrices in the texture and use that in, like, instead of having, like, all the shader constants and everything, because those were, like, super slow going through. And I'm like, well, if we just use this, and it didn't work. But
it was fun to do.
Yeah, it was fun to do. And it was, like, that's how I was, like, learning about, like, optimizations and how, like, you know, how all this stuff sort of works together. And that was my job for about 10 months until the company kind of went terrible.
And so that's also 360 practice.
That was 360 practice. So I was like super familiar with 360 hardware. Then quit that job, and a friend of mine, Aubrey Hesselgren, he's a good guy. We started a game together. He was the lead designer on Hoop World. I was a programmer. We started a game together where it was a game called Goo, which came out at the same time as World of Goo, which that's, it was a very good game.
Okay.
World of Goo, not my game.
Okay.
No, World of Goo was amazing. My game was terrible.
Okay.
But it was super physics stuff.
Okay.
It was multi-threaded physics craziness.
Okay.
And that was my, hey, let's have multi-threaded fun kind of time. And that's when I learned a whole bunch about threading. And that game kind of went nowhere. And then around that time, I was looking at IGF winners because Goo had got into the IGF. And I'm like, oh, cool. And I look through winners and I see Gish. And I'm like, oh, because I have this thing where I have to like see everything. Oh, who made this? Who made this? I'm like, oh, Edmund made that. I'm like, cool. I'm like, I wonder if I still have him on Instant Messenger. And like, I did, and we started talking. And then, you know, I went to Santa Cruz because we were going to do Gish 2 for 360, but that fell through.
Okay.
And then Meat Boy sort of happened. And by that time, I had the Goo engine. And then I was like, well, I'm going to revamp this because I always revamp stuff. So I'm like, well, I'll revamp this for Meat Boy. And then, yeah, from that, made the tile engine, made the tile editor, made all of the thingies for it.
So that's kind of interesting. Like, I never knew that backstory, actually. So it's that is kind of a, like almost a training montage, that whole thing.
Pretty much.
Right up to Super Meat Boy.
Yeah.
All the things that are like, you know,
all
wax
the hard
on, wax
ships.
Off, and
yeah,
like,
yeah.
It turns out to be really useful.
yeah.
For the big game. So let me ask about the Super Meat Boy then, actually. I got to keep checking the clock so I know what times we're at.
Oh, yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about that, the whole tile editor stuff. I kind of wanted to ask a little bit about that, especially because this is something that that always is in my brain for some reason.
Right.
Which is, okay, so especially on something like Super Meat Boy,
mm-hmm.
right? You've got a situation where you guys weren't even in the same location.
No. I was in North Carolina.
Right, because you're separated.
Yeah.
So how did you guys go about figuring out that art process? Because you had, like, again, you got your own custom engine,
mm-hmm.
right? He works in whatever tools he works in. I guess
Flash
is what he normally uses, right?
Yeah.
And so for day one, okay, we should probably also turn off. I didn't say silence your cell phones because I normally don't actually care about that, but I should silence right next to the
microphone.
See,
now you know why they say it. Yeah.
Point being,
yeah.
You sit down
mm-hmm.
and you're like, we, you know, need to start building this game. And maybe there were some decisions, I guess, you made from the previous game in terms of how art would come in. But like, you're going to work with Edmund. He needs to put all this content in. How did you like work through that process? Was it iterative, or did you know up front what you needed? Like, give me some sort of insight into, if I'm in that situation, you just drop me in place of you.
Mm-hmm.
What are all the things to think about, and how you got an efficient way of like implementing the, you know, did you do importers or exporters, or how, you know, give me that whole thing.
So my kind of philosophy about that and about working with any artist is the way you get the best work out of people is by giving them the easiest way to give you the best work.
Okay.
So when it came to Edmund, oh, some applause.
There are some people who approve
of
that philosophy.
Well, so with Edmund, he works in Flash, and I was familiar with Flash. And my thinking was, because at one point before, like right before Ed, I'm like, I was trying to make some particle effects for Goo. And I'm like, you know, I can make a thing. And I'm just like, well, I'm basically just making Flash keyframing interface, but without all of the stuff of Flash. Because Flash, for as terrible as it is, it's decent in animation.
Okay.
So with Ed, he only works in Flash.
Okay.
And I was like, you know, why fight it? So Kyle Gabler, World of Goo, had told me about, because it came up in a conversation or something about how they did the art for World of Goo.
Okay.
And Kyle Gabler uses Flash, and
okay.
he is like, well, Flash has this extendable JSFL thing. It's like little Java files that can run in the IDE and just automate a bunch of process. And I'm like, oh, okay.
Okay, so this is actually like a scripting system that's inside Flash.
Yeah, yeah. It's called JSFL. It's still around.
This is a JavaScript thing that you write. So it's basically like the same as the ActionScript stuff. You write it in there.
Yeah, it's like, it's weird. You would think they would have just made it ActionScript, but it's a weird version of Java. Like a weird version of JavaScript.
Oh, JavaScript.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then you can integrate that into like the Java C libraries, so you can make like DLLs that load into the interface. It's really crazy. You can do a ton with
it.
So
inside the Flash JavaScript, you can actually load a C DLL that you've made externally.
Yeah, and then you can call functions to it.
And you can call functions to it.
Yeah, yeah. So,
okay, so, all right.
So
wow.
What I did...
And can you pass data in some way as well?
Yeah.
Like, so you can actually sort of curry, get the Flash information
yeah.
and pipe it out using this JavaScript shim.
Sort of.
Okay.
Sort of. Okay. So this is where the craziness comes in. So I wanted to have what Kyle Gabler's thing did is it just basically took every symbol, because in Flash everything is a symbol.
Okay.
And you know, it just took as just separate PNGs. And I'm like, that's cool, but you know, with a lot of the Meat Boy stuff, it's tiny, it's small. I don't need a tiny PNG.
Okay.
I'm like, I need to make a good texture atlas. So what I did...
Okay, so hold on a second for people who don't know all of that stuff.
Yeah.
So what you're saying is basically in the World of Goo pipeline, what they did is they literally took everything that the artist had made in Flash and they output like each frame or whatever of every animation
something
as
like
PNGs?
That. Well, I don't think it was each frame because... Okay. The animations themselves are like keyframed, and there's like motion tweens and everything,
okay.
But like the actual symbols, like if he drew a little goo ball and it needed to move, they would export the goo ball and the animation.
And the animation for separate things, okay.
Yeah.
And you wanted to do a texture atlas.
I wanted to do a texture atlas and export the animations because the detail that we had and the things that we had and the amount of assets we had, it was better to have, you know, 10 texture atlases than 1,000 images or whatever.
Okay, so you want to take all the symbols, you want to pack them into a big texture atlas that you can look up into or something, and then you want some metadata that tells you where everything was.
And that's exactly what I did.
Okay.
So you can't just like, you can't just pass that to C, you actually have to use the JSFL stuff to rearrange, well, this is what I did. Right. Everything that Ed would draw, it goes into the library. I would take, and the JSFL creates a new Flash document. It then takes everything out of the library and places it on the stage. Then it rotates and moves stuff so that they all fit into the smallest texture possible.
Okay.
Then I have all of the positions recorded. That goes into an index file. Boom, that's my texture atlas. Now I go through each one of the symbols, and then I go and take all of the animation data, like sound calls, everything, and I have that in a separate file that gets piped out and then written to a file. So in Meat Boy, there were AM files. That was all the animation data. There were ITX, which was the texture atlas index stuff.
Okay.
And then there was just the PNG. So every animation, every art asset is those three things. Like all the cutscenes, everything.
Go in there.
Yeah. So, and that was an exporter that would run in the IDE, which was super inefficient for, it was great for like level stuff, but cutscenes, it would take forever because it's literally the IDE is like, okay, put this here, put this here, export this, and it's like,
And that's running in interpreted JavaScript.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's like the slowest possible.
It's the slowest possible thing doing the most possible work.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so yeah, that's how everything, like the very end cinematic would take about 14 minutes to export.
Wow.
Which was a pain in the ass.
I feel like that's almost time to compile maybe a few of the files from the Unreal Engine.
Yeah, basically, yeah. Just a few, not too many.
So here's a question for you. You said that when you're putting out these, you're making your texture atlas.
Yeah.
You actually sort of suggest you're jittering them to get a tighter packing than if they were just rectangles, basically.
Yeah, I would, and I would only do 90 degree, you know,
flips.
Because that's it would been. Okay. You're trying to do more. Oh, this is a 73 degree angle.
Okay.
No, you don't want to do that, but. Also, I don't think that would be very efficient.
So did you, was that something that you, why did you feel like you needed to do that, right? Did you use just the standard rectangle kind of packing? Like, why did you feel like you needed better packing? Was just like, I just want it? Or was there a time when you were like, no, this isn't working because we have too many assets?
So I'm a sick person. And
well, based on the drawing.
Based
earlier,
on the drawing.
Say, yeah, okay,
well, that
okay.
You can't prove that was
no,
a
we can't.
You can't prove that was a
I think it was streamed.
Yeah. So, the first one I did was, all these little rectangles. I'm like, that's cool, but there's a lot of white space. And I'm like, I can definitely, in my head, because at my learning station job, I made a calendar program that you could have little appointments, and it would fill them in and Lego them together. And I'm like,
see.
I can just do that again and make it all like smashed together and as efficient as possible. And yeah, we didn't really need it, but it was fun to do, and it worked out. So, yeah, that was kind of why I was like, okay, well, we definitely need to be able to move this, like, 90 degree, puzzle, Tetris them all into this thing.
So that was purely just to satisfy your own OCD.
Oh yeah, like, no,
this white space is driving me nuts.
I posted pictures of it because I was super proud of it because it looks like it's definitely a computer did it, and that's what looks so cool about it.
So let's jump a little bit forward in that process then. Mm. So after we've got all this stuff exported and we have these sort of files that encode whatever the flash animation,
yeah,
the markup for the texture atlas, we've got that.
Mm-hmm.
So now, we've got to build a game,
yeah,
right? And so Flash doesn't really allow us to probably do enough stuff that we need to do for that. So
no.
You said you built the letter and stuff. Talk about, how did you guys figure out how that piece was going to work? Like, how did you figure out how you were going to, like, assemble the game out of Flash pieces? Because there's always a bunch of things, like, how much do we do in the Flash versus how much do we do in the level editor? Like,
yeah.
Was that an iterative process? Give me a little bit of just sort of the overview.
So,
how did that go? And was it just we did the first thing and we just used it, or did we have to iterate? Like, how did that go?
It was actually kind of we did the first thing and then used it. So what happened was, in my thinking, I was like, Ed's going to do all the animations in Flash. Everything animation-wise, everything cutscene, everything menu, that's going to be somehow in Flash, and okay, I'm going to hook all that stuff to my engine code. So when it came to like the level editor, I wrote a basic tile editor first. Click here, here's a tile, blah blah blah.
Okay.
At that point, that's like done. That's your collision. Because the tiles themselves were just PNGs that Ed made in,
okay,
Photoshop. That was the only thing he used Photoshop for, was just making the little art for the tiles.
Is it strictly tiles? Are they always little squares?
Yeah, they're always little. Okay. Well, there's little square, little triangles and stuff, little tiny squares.
This is the international.
Yeah, international symbol for little triangle. But yeah, we had all those little shapes, and I made the editor to just be able to place shapes and have a collision and have basically a PNG of Meat Boy just bop around. Then I made the animation stuff, the animation exporter, and then I spent some time making sure that integrated in because everything was from Flash. So like the saws were animated in,
okay,
Flash to spin around because Ed animated them in Flash to spin around. So they might as well spin around the same way that he animates them in Flash in the editor. So everything outside of tiles and was Flash, with the exception of the editor had a way to do waypoints. So like,
okay,
if you had like a missile turret and you wanted to move up here and here, well, you couldn't do that in Flash.
Okay.
But you could say here and at this time be here, at this time be here, and then loop back. So that was the only like animation stuff that was in the editor, which a lot of people with the Super Meat World stuff made some pretty crude stuff with that, which is pretty funny.
So what do, like, when you say collision,
mm-hmm,
so you've got two different types of things in there. You've got the Flash objects,
yeah,
and you've got the PNGs coming from Photoshop that are tiles,
yeah,
right? Is that just like, how are you doing collision there? Is a tile just like a solid rectangle collision, or is it like actually the bitmap collision, or like what did you, and then
oh,
for the Flash
just
objects, what was the collision there? Like how did that stuff?
So the collision in the Flash objects, I had in all of Ed's libraries, I had bounding circle and bounding square. And if he would put those in,
okay,
what the editor, or was it the editor or the exporter? One of them would basically mark it as this is a bounding square, and it would,
okay,
use the width of the containing movie clip as the diameter of the circle or the width of the square. So like if I,
okay,
like
so,
it would be
so
a circle.
So he didn't actually place the square in the circle. He just said this is a
square.
No.
He placed them and then would move them to the correct.
I see.
The engine would take those and be like, oh, well, don't render this,
yes,
and make a bounding circle there and tie it to this.
Okay.
So, and then that gave him the power to be like, oh, this saw, it's a little too big or something. And I'm like, well, fix it. I don't care. Fix it. Like, you shrink it. I don't need to shrink it. So, and that offloaded,
okay,
the little nitpicky work on him,
yeah,
because he can change it easier and faster and test it than I can change it, give it to him, test it. That we just cut out the middleman there and let him place all of that kind of collision
stuff. The collision Meat Boy is basically squares and circles.
Squares and circles for the objects, and then tile is just your basic tile collision.
So tiles are like, they're always a rectangle.
They're a rectangle or whatever the tile shape is. So they're a rectangle, like half rectangle, or there was a because it was, you have the tile, which is the image, and then you have the actual model, which is either the square or the triangle. And
okay,
then from there, then it would it would treat it as a triangle at that place in the
brain. So you actually have like underlying shapes that would then, okay. And so then all these things come into the collision system and then they just flow through naturally in that way. And the editor is basically the thing, either it came from Flash and was marked up there, or the editor said, this tile is a triangle shape.
Yeah.
That goes to the collision.
Okay. Yeah.
So how did you deal with like the, you know, I guess the binding between these things? So you have all these Flash files and that sort of stuff, and I want to make one of these like, you know, like you said, the sort of the spinning saw blade or something that. And I want to put that in there. So what does that look like for Edmund? You know, he's building a level or something like that. Like how, and what's the iteration like that? Because you said like he had to go back to Flash maybe to change the collision sizes. Like how did all that work out? Was it good? Was it, you know?
No, that actually worked out pretty well because that was a, because you have the forest, you have the hospital, you have the salt factory. Each one of those was a set of a flash file for all the objects, flash file for all the like set pieces that have like your trees, your waterfalls, a flash file for little animals like the squirrels and stuff.
Okay.
So all those would be placed in a file that I just called a palette, and it would be like, oh, object is this .am file.
Okay.
You know, set piece is this, and it kind of went down through all that. So
and
all
it,
he
it
would
remembered
do,
the .am file name, like the file name.
Yeah, yeah.
Is the
it would
binding.
Just load that. Yeah, it would just load that in because he would like in the editor he would be like, all right, I want to make a forest level. So he would load up forest.lp, which was level palette. He would load that up. That would take and grab his objects, his tile sheet, his basically everything he would need for that level. So then, like, if he did have to go back and change a saw or adjust, or if he wanted to add a set piece, he would go to, like, set piece, the FLA, put it in, re-export. Then he would just load up the level, scroll through, and there's his new thing.
And is that like, wait, so did the files ever contain more than one placeable object at a time then?
Meaning
like, so I have these flash files and they're coming up in this palette.
Oh,
I
see.
Do I reach into the flash file export, the exported flash file?
Uh-huh.
Do I reach in there and grab out a particular element of it so that there's like a double binding? We have to remember like, okay, there's a file name that it corresponds to and like a sub name inside of
it. Yeah, it was based on an ID. So,
okay.
So if he was, and it was all done with mouse wheel, so he would have like a, like he would go through the set piece. He would just like scroll through. Those would have unique IDs placed to them, and they were according to how they were layered in the FLA file.
Okay.
So he would have to place new stuff at the top, so that
okay.
yeah, and that worked out well.
All
like
right.
when the index would mess up, he would be like, "Hey, it's not working." I'd be, "Did you place it at the top?" And he's like,
"No way."
Yeah, and then
oh my God.
He would place it at the top and then re-export, and then it would be fine because the level. The actual level files had
just
all the indexes in there.
I see.
And then it would just like load the indexes from the animation thing.
Okay, so it's straight up like a file name plus a number.
File name plus a number
and the numbers
equals...
had better line up Edmund.
Yeah, yeah, okay. Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, because he had two different, you had the animation file, which had the IDs of the animations. Then you had the index file. So because I made it so he could do either a full export, which would take forever, or just a texture export. So if he wanted to change how this tree looked, instead of exporting everything, he could just export the texture. But if he exported the texture and not the animation file and happened to add something, then everything was
wrong.
Just wrong.
Did this cause a lot of problems in development?
No.
Not that bad?
No, like one or two times.
Okay.
And he's like, oh, because it was easy, because it was all in the Flash IDE form.
Okay.
He would just literally, like, it was in the dropdown for commands in Flash, so he would just, done.
Okay.
So, yeah, made it pretty easy on him.
So, let's...
All that stuff is caveman stuff now compared to what I have.
Okay, so
yeah, what I made
hit me. So okay, so you felt like that was not
that was stupid. I hated the exporter so much.
All right, so what did you change?
I made it just read SWF files. Like it renders vectored SWF files, animations, reads all of the sounds from the SWF files. So all you have is an SWF file. That's
so
it.
What did you do? Like, did you reverse into it, or did you go get like a flash?
I downloaded the Flash, the SWF file spec from Adobe, and I read it.
No.
Yes. That's what I did. That's right. And yeah. And that was super fun, because now I can make anything. Like, it's so insane because it went from, oh God, we got to spend like 14 minutes exporting this to, oh, well, just here's the SWF, and then it just renders. And it's fine, and it's all like, it's all vector, so it can be any size, any, you know, oh, it's great.
So I guess let me ask the question then, since I was kind of interested about how you're doing the layout before. Mm-hmm. So now that you've moved to an SWF file, you're reading it directly. Again, how do you deal with the whole, like, I've got these in-game tools, they need to reference the stuff from the SWF, and the artist just, you know, outputted a bunch of SWF files. Yeah. How are you doing that binding now? Did you change the way you're doing it, or is it still name and index?
So now what it is now instead of a level palette and all those things, now it's just the SWF. And inside the SWF, you have clips on the main stage. So you have a clip called set pieces. You have a clip called objects. You have a clip called parallax. And what it does, what the editor does, is it takes the SWF, looks for those specific things, and then just makes a big giant database, and then you have your indices to, like, if this is a set piece, you know, you hit this movie clip, and then you render this index from inside that, the set piece. Hold on. Inside the set piece,
there's a... If you need the drawing, we have the drawing.
Inside the set piece, I'll draw.
So this guy, if you push down that one, you can scroll with it.
Oh, okay.
So if you need more space.
Yeah, neato. I'm gonna draw a dick like immediately. So let's say
really
this.
Like the degree of lewd drawings that were gonna happen on Handmade Hero. I guess we just get them all out right
you
now.
Weren't,
and you're, yeah.
You weren't at my wedding. My wedding, our guest book was draw your best dick. And there are some amazing ones there.
You probably had a lot of good artists.
Yeah.
At the
oh yeah,
wedding.
Yeah.
Okay.
Ben,
that's gonna be like a that's gonna be the Smithsonian someday.
Yeah, no, like, I certainly hope so.
You know, collection
after the bombs
like
drop.
The dick di- the
yeah,
dictator.
After all the bombs drop, and we're going through the Commonwealth, and there's like, they go into this thing, and there's just this in this house, there's just this picture of these two dicks kissing.
Yeah, like, we can rebuild society. Yeah. Now we know what it was.
We
about.
Know what we know what it was like before the bombs.
All right. Yeah. So continue.
You can see why I'm not an artist, because that's the best square I can make.
It's beautiful, man.
Yeah. So let's say, oh boy. Why is it?
It's just this button.
Oh,
the button
I'm fat fingering it. Yeah. All right.
See, you gotta work on your art skills, man. You gotta know how to use a Wacom tablet.
Okay, I didn't mean to draw a face, but I did.
All right.
So let's say this is, that's O for obstacle. I'm still drawing a face.
Okay.
All right. this is S for set pieces, and this is P for parallax.
Okay.
Now, this is our SWF.
Okay.
Okay. That loads into the engine through this little arrow here.
Okay, in what universe was that an arrow?
I don't know. I can't. It's weird. I need it to be flat.
It's like, hello, we are the beings that only have blocks.
So that gets loaded
in. It's wonderful.
Yeah, I know, this is great. So that gets loaded in, and basically if you want to think about these as, these are all little databases.
Okay.
And each one, inside of each one of these.
What are they keyed on?
Inside of each one, if you look in the FLA, there you have your layers for people that are familiar with Flash. And like this would be like a tree. Like the I can't.
Just that button, man. You just can't push the button.
Tree. But let's say you have tree and this and that, and those are just like, it doesn't base it off names or anything. It's literally based off where it is in the like drawing hierarchy in the FLA file. So if the tree is at the very top, that's like the last index. The very bottom is zero, and this is N, okay?
Okay.
So.
And this is literally just the draw order, meaning what they set up as like the overlap.
Yeah, because if you're doing Flash correctly and you don't have everything all piled on one layer, you have everything on separate layers.
Okay.
And that naturally just forms a database. So
that's
kind of the structure of, let's say, parallax or whatever.
Okay.
And then when the engine loads in this clip.
And when you say parallax, you mean the background.
Oh yeah, like
for
little
the thing, right?
Little background things that you can, and it doesn't matter because
you
know, it's just z-axis. It's,
okay.
I know 2D people are afraid of z-axis, but it's helpful.
Okay.
So when you load those in, the engine just basically goes through and just loads all of these clips because it doesn't care and it doesn't know what's on the layers. It just knows this is this is child one in parallax clip. This is child two, child three, child four. So inside the engine, when I load in this parallax thing, I go, okay, these are all my parallax things. These are their indices. So, and actually I don't even load the things themselves because they load when they're only needed.
So it's on demand.
Yeah, so when the levels
like. So
the
SW file, you basically parse like the header of it or something.
I parse everything because in the engine, that's how the SWF files work, is I don't want to actively tessellate everything
right
then and there because the tessellation's so quick, I can do it at load time and nobody knows because it's just there. So when I go through and I load these, I have like just an internal database, and when he's scrolling through the mouse or when the artist is scrolling through the mouse and they like see a little parallax they want and they place it, then the level, that's a level.
It's a pretty good level.
Yeah, no, it's really, here, I'll decorate it. Look at that, that's a cliff. There's a tree. Yeah, so when he clicks and places this tree right here, like that's, let's just say that's number zero.
Okay.
And it also has a sub ID because it needs to tell it that it's in parallax. So it's got a sub ID, let's say parallax is three, because I actually think it is three. So
now those are hard-coded in the engine, I assume, like parallax is three.
Yeah, parallax is three. This one,
and those are by name in the SWF. So meaning the engine first looks at the SWF.
Engine looks.
Here's my obstacle layers, what did you say the S was?
That's set pieces. For my set piece clip, my object clip, and my parallax clip.
Okay.
And then everything inside those clips are all the objects, all the parallax, all the everything.
Got it. And so does this would then have the same problem as the existing one, whereas if they change the order of things in that folder, so you're still going to tell Edmund, you got to put it at the top.
Yeah. However, because it doesn't take 14 minutes, he just moves it and hits publish, and then 2 seconds later, he has it. It's
so why aren't those by name instead of by number? Is it because the names, the artists don't want to set names, or what was like? Tell me a little bit, because you went by name for this guy up here.
My thinking,
right? This is by name, but this guy down here is not.
My thinking is because these are all hard coded into the engine. You're not going to have anything extra because these are going to be your objects, your set pieces, your parallax, your special like bandage girl or your band-aids or stuff like that. You're only going to have these set things, and these are going to be things that I actively want to see, because it's not an editor like Unity where he can actively go, hey, I want to load in Sunshine Clip, and then Sunshine Clip comes in, and that's a whole different thing, because the levels themselves are structured, like any level for any tile game, you're going to have tiles, you're going to have obstacles, you're going to have enemies, like those are all the things you're going to have, and then adding those actually to the editor is just as easy as like, okay, look for this clip. This is this clip, this is this sub ID, and then with the editor now, you can bind a button to a mode and then be able to place whatever you want. So it's like, the thinking was, these are always gonna remain static, these are always going to be random. Because they're not, he's gonna like add 10 different trees or five
and
different
you just,
trees.
You, like him naming them tree zero, tree one, tree two.
Wouldn't do any good because I still have to go through and like I would actually have to know the names at that point because I run everything based on numbers, like little, like the indexes and everything. And it makes more sense for me to just go, okay, here, this tree, I don't care that it's a tree. I just care that it's index zero for clip. Or clip database three.
Well, so I'm assuming though, and sorry to belabor this because I'm curious.
No, cool.
So I am assuming that here, you know, we could
draw way better squares than I do.
I'm classically trained. Mm. I went to square school. I went to the Square Conservatory.
Oh, wow.
where we studied drawing squares.
We studied
over
squares,
and over
yeah.
And over again, yeah. My hands still shake a little bit because they're very strict teachers. So we could introduce here, like, you know, if this is our SWF file, right?
Uh-huh.
We could introduce a table here that's like, okay, the last time I imported this thing, like index zero was like the tree or something, and index one was whatever, and it stores the string,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
And so then the next time you load it in, it would look at the names and go, oh, tree moved. It's like, it's down here now, but I found it and I remapped it, but you don't seem interested even, I would say, in these strings. And so I just want to just know specifically, like, do you think it's just not worth the time? Do you think the artists just don't name them anyway? Or what's,
That's the thing. So I never thought of it as, like, I want them to name, because the integrity of this database needs to always be consistent.
Okay.
Because it doesn't, because it's easy to fix.
Okay.
So, and with Flash just being able, because it's literally like, oh, if tree's here and it's supposed to be there, you just drag and drop, publish, done.
Okay.
And for me to do this little part, that introduces like a level of complexity where it's like, okay, well, now for some reason, the tree's up here, and this was zero, but it was this back before, and it's just...
Okay, that's really interesting.
Yeah, so for me, it's just like, I don't care what's in here, as long as I give it to the artist, and if he's like, I want to add a billion things, and if he knows to add them at the top, he can add a billion things in like 20 minutes, and then they're just in the editor. Whereas if he had to go through and name them and all this stuff, then it's like... And then, yeah, artists don't name anything. That's... At least Ed doesn't. He would name stuff... And it was so irritating in Meat Boy. He would name stuff XXXXXXXXXX1.
Well, that's to the...
And that was a tree!
But that's how you know the difference between that and XXXXXXX0.
Yeah, and then it was no, it wasn't X anymore. It was... That was the name of it.
Okay.
And I'm like, this is useless. This is totally useless. So, like, to take... Like, it doesn't need to have a name because it's just... It's these things, and, like, when you think about the end product, if you want to say, the end product of this level, that's always going to be a tree until he goes into the editor and changes it.
Like, yes.
Or unless he messes up the order here. But and if so he messes up the order, he can fix it super quick.
So would one way to state that be like, you come down on the side of, look, they either have to get a bunch of names to not collide with each other, or they have to keep the indices in order. I don't really think there's a bonus to this one, so why not remove that from the process?
Basically,
Because they're all going to be in order somewhere.
I actually think it's easier to just be like, the rule be at the top.
At the top.
Yeah, you know, instead of name it.
Name it.
Yeah.
That's really fascinating, actually.
Okay. And it works.
Yeah.
I like it.
All right, so I think that's pretty good for art pipeline stuff.
Okay.
That was actually really interesting. I wanted to talk a little bit about the controller stuff, and so I'm just keeping an eye on time here, so I think I wanted to switch over to that, if that's cool.
Yeah.
So I wanted to talk about the control stuff for Super Meat Boy, A, because it's like way far out of anything I ever do. Like, I've never worked on controller code for an action game or anything like that.
Yeah.
And also because, you know, it's pretty universally accepted as a very good example of doing the controls right. And so I kind of wanted to get, like, you know, to start off with, what was the process like for doing that, right? Like, were the controls great from day one? Did you iterate constantly? Was there playtesting? Like, give me a little overview before I start asking questions about the actual code.
So the way I approach it is I'm very bitchy.
Okay.
When it comes to controls.
Okay.
I hate bad controls. They ruin everything for me. It's terrible. So before I made Art Pipeline and after I made Place Tiles, I worked on movement.
Okay.
And the way I did that is I knew, because the Flash version does not have good controls. And I threw that, I didn't even look at it. I threw that out.
Okay.
I knew he had to jump and wall jump, and that's what I went by.
All right.
So for about 3 months, because that was the first controller game I made too. I didn't do anything in Hoop World for controls. Goo was just basically a mouse game.
Okay.
So that was the first time, like, good control. Well, actually, you could use the controller in Goo, but it was different. You just move a thing around. You know, you're not actively, So what I did for that was I made a simple tile level editor thing where I could just place some tiles and my little Meat Boy square, because he was still just a square at that point. The little red square could just run around and like wall jump and stuff. And what I did for about 3 months is I tweaked it. And the way I tweaked it was I would play through it and I would make specific situations where it would be, this is a one tile block and this is a one tile block. I want to be able to wall jump from this one tile block and land on top of this block.
Got it.
So what I did, and it was two prongs, so it was a lot of iteration, but I also made, there are no physics formulas in Meat Boy. It's all just garbage.
So it's completely hand-coded. Every formula is,
I mean, there's gravity,
right?
But there's this thing called air friction.
Okay.
You know?
There's real friction in the air.
Yeah,
there's,
but
air
not
friction.
Like this, not the... There's air turn friction.
They haven't found all the fundamental particles
That's true.
Yet necessarily. You don't know what could
this
be.
This is high-level quantum shit we're talking about, okay? So I had all these variables because, like, as I was playing through, and this is how, like, a thing like air friction would come up, is be like, okay, I can jump, but I don't like how if I want to go back this way, if I'm just doing it force-based and I'm just going like, oh, just add to the force just until he goes back, I don't like that.
Okay.
So I would be like, well, I want like a multiplier if I'm going back this way in the air, and that became air friction.
Okay.
And then I made a form like in-game where I could change values in-game and then test it. So Meat Boy is a combination, like Meat Boy controls are a combination of garbage formulas that don't make any physical sense and garbage variables that have no bearing in reality.
Okay.
So it's just knobs.
So in some sense, the process was create an obstacle course, sort of, right? In other words,
various
come up with
obstacle
things
courses,
I want to be able to do well, right? And then sort of start with some formulas, because I guess you made, so how did you pick the initial set? I mean, you just like, because this is an iterative process, you got to start somewhere.
Yeah, it was it was just, you know, velocity he runs, jumps, and then gravity. And then, you know, run, you didn't really have to change run, you just changed the speed of run, but it was all about like jump and air control was the crazy thing.
Well, change the speed of run, I mean, it's got some acceleration, like Meat Boy doesn't immediately
he
go
has,
full speed,
I
right?
think so, he so has two frames. Like it's it's insane because and I remember that during the process I'm like, if there's a saw firing down at me, I need to get out of the way. I don't want to. And since he's got air friction and all this crap, why can't he just instantly accelerate?
Okay.
So that was kind of how that went. It was just like have some basic movement and then like you said, like obstacle course and everything. And with that sort of iteration, it made. Like once those controls got like perfect, where I could make basically anything I wanted, and in some way, like figure out how to get up there or over there. Once I could do that, then it was like these are the controls. That took about 3 months.
That's an impressively like that. That's a, I guess I would say is looking at the final game.
Yeah.
That's kind of interesting to hear because that to get to those controls, you really did have to do the work. Like it was not just like I don't know, sat down.
Well, I mean, it was a lot of like dartboard.
Yeah.
And then like, oh, cool.
Okay.
Yeah, because I don't know what the units for air tourney friction.
Right.
Yeah. There's no
units. For meat. What's the
meat air turn
friction?
Yeah. So I don't know the units for that, but. Well, the interesting part of that, though, was once those controls got in place and Ed started building levels, we found more stuff we could do through the level design. There's something called an S-jump.
Okay.
And the way the S-jump works is really kind of crazy because you can jump and do this and actually get slightly higher than if you were to jump and do that.
Okay.
But it feels correct. Because of how weird you control in the air.
Okay.
So you can S jump and go into these little tiny crevice things where you couldn't possibly go over if you were to just wall jump out. And that was all attributed to just air control, air friction.
And you didn't tune for the S jump. The S jump was
just
like,
came in.
Because you made all these weird formulas, there are certain like holes, like, or I shouldn't say holes, but like optimal places in the formulas where if you just do the right series of things, you can get a little extra out of
you
them
can,
because
you
they're
can
not
like,
physically correct.
You can like maneuver into these things,
Okay.
Yeah, and that's, and those became like super special and they are totally wrong, but they feel super correct because of how everything sort of flows in anything. It's not, oh, coded so you can do an S-jump, because that would be a very this thing. It's a, you know, it's more natural, and because of that, it just feels like it is part of the controls. Like, it was meant to be that way.
And so how, like, what's an example, and it's probably something that's hard to remember exactly what it was, but like, so the fundamental quantities that you're tracking from frame to frame for the control scheme, what did those look like, right? Like, you know, you said velocity, position, are there more, like, are there things, you know, and how are you looking at the stick? Like, what does the sort of, like, state, the input space look like, kind of, as we're going through this?
Yeah, well, I'm trying to... So I don't remember exactly like everything that I know I like kept the velocity and this jump height and everything because there was a thing where if you tap jump, he'll jump one tile, even if you let go, because it feels weird to jump and only do like that.
Right.
It feels better to jump and do like that.
Okay.
Or if you hold it, jump and go like that.
So there's some thresholding in there. You'll never jump less than this amount.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay.
And that made it. For it just feels more consistent that way because your mind and your finger they don't always at the same same speed. As far as like looking at the controller and everything, I was just
That
Did I hit
good.
Something?
I don't know.
Well, this drawing's just got a lot better.
Well, HDMI, no signal.
Yeah.
Keep talking. I'll take a look at just make sure we didn't lose any plugs here.
So, yeah, as far as like looking at the controls, yeah, I don't even really know. I mean, it was such a weird, like the way I built the controls in was everything in the engine is abstracted because I come from Unreal Town where they abstract everything like to a crazier degree than I do. So like when I built the engine, I built something that could be ported.
Okay.
And like that's what I prided on. It's
okay.
Like I ported Meat Boy in a weekend to PS3.
Oh,
like
wow. Okay.
You know, that's and it's because of how I structured everything. So like with the controller, it's all, you know, it's X input for this, it's this for that. So you have your X input talks to like an input layer, which I just recently changed because I didn't like the name of it. Because that's what you do.
Just the name.
Yeah, well,
the name was the only thing you didn't like.
I didn't like the name and I didn't like how it was set up.
All right.
So I changed all of it.
Okay.
But it's better now. So that talks to like the input layer that is like, that just basically gives you, I have a thing in the engine where you can use like the left and right stick as D-pads, which is
okay.
The easiest thing in the world because it's just, you know, if you're more this way than this way, you're going left. If you're more this way than this way, you're going up.
So it's actually digital?
Yeah.
Are the controls for Meat Boy digital always?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so actually all of the analogness comes from, you know, how long you've pushed, never how hard you pushed.
Yeah, no.
On every platform?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so...
Well, I was asking about what sort of quantities you track there. So you've got, it sounds like you've got D-pad in. So you've got, you've got basically like a directional
thing. Yeah, left, right, up, down.
Left, right, up, down.
Yeah.
And you've got the buttons.
Yeah, I got the buttons.
And so at that stage, I guess what I'm trying to ask is, from frame to frame,
mm-hmm.
are these, you know, you've got a bunch of sort of pseudo-physics formulas that you've been working on that you tweaked.
Yeah.
Is there carryover beyond just some quantities like velocity and position? Are there other things that needed to get tracked? Like, oh, how long has he been holding down the button? And we do some stuff with that.
Well, there was that.
Like, do you remember any interesting things about that? That
oh,
were
actually,
not,
yes.
Not, that wouldn't be the first thing you'd think of.
Yeah,
but
so
what happened.
That's actually a really good one. And it's the best part because it's the part nobody realizes,
okay.
But they all do it.
Okay.
And it was something I discovered during the 3 months of craziness.
Okay.
Wall jump has a 200 millisecond leeway of if you're on a wall and you press off the wall, it's not going to immediately take them off the wall because in your brain, when you first play Meat Boy, you want to jump off the wall and go the direction.
Okay.
But a lot of the times you'll either do direction first or you'll do it at the same time.
Okay.
And if you do it at the same time, he detaches from the wall and then he just falls
and
straight down.
And you can't jump. Okay.
So that 200 milliseconds makes it so anybody can like, it's long enough that it's like, oh, I push to the left and I jump to the left and it feels right. But it's short enough that it's not like, I'm trying to get off the wall and I can't get off the wall.
So he actually sticks to the wall. He doesn't come off the wall, but you still allow them to jump for 200.
No.
He actually sticks for 200.
Yeah, I had a thing like that and I hated it because
it
felt weird and it was just bug prone. So I'm just like, well, he'll just stick for just a tiny amount of time.
Okay, so if you start pushing off the wall, there's actually like a counter that's
going to
start incrementing at that point or decrementing or however you did it in there.
But yeah.
Something's going to count up to 200 milliseconds over the frames.
Yeah.
And if you let go, you know, at some point there, he'll just do the standard falling or whatever. But if you push the button during that time, off
he
goes.
Yeah, and then he jumps off.
Was there anything else like that? Like, how about edge roll off? Like, as I'm going towards an edge and I'm going to do a jump, do you get some time after, or
I've actually never been a fan of that.
Okay.
And no, Meat Boy doesn't have that. I had that in a prototype I was making for a different type of game, and I didn't find it all that useful.
Oh, really?
Like,
okay.
I don't know. I don't know if that's in other games, but I always felt like in Meat Boy, maybe it has to do more with the game because even though there are, you know, there's this gap right here. And you, in order to make the jump, you have to literally jump right here. But those situations in the game aren't that common because it's not like a life or death thing. You can jump and then maybe hit the wall and jump off. So you can like compensate for yourself. So maybe that's why it never...
It just wasn't designed to make right at the edge jumping the most important thing. So
it wasn't like a Mega Man thing where you have 2 pixels and
okay.
either you make it or you die.
Okay.
And because in that thing, and that's... You know, with Mega Man, you would jump and you would hit this wall. But in Meat Boy, you hit the wall and then you can just jump off and
jump
and go right back on top. Yeah. So I think that's why I didn't actually use anything like that in there, because it just seemed unnecessary. So
at the end of this 3 months, you've got the wall sticking. I'm assuming that's part of the 3 months process was the 200 millisecond wall stick. You've got the fake physics formulas, Refinus physics, the Refinus model.
Reftonian,
right? Yes, Reftonian dynamics.
Yeah, yes.
There we go. So we got Reftonian dynamics in there. How much did those change over the course of the game? Did you literally stay with exactly as it was at the end of 3 months, or was there tuning that happened after, as you get through the game more? What was it?
No, they stayed that way the entire
time. Exactly. So what there's basically exactly the same as the end of the 3 months.
Yeah. The controls at the end of the 3 months were the same as the ones that were in the final game. And the reason is because at the end of the 3 months, Ed started making levels.
Okay.
And when he started making levels, like, the thing that makes Meat Boy great is the controls complement the level design, and
okay.
the level design complements the controls.
Okay.
So if the level design was terrible and the controls were good, the game would still be terrible. If
okay.
the level design was amazing and the controls were terrible, the game would be terrible.
Okay.
But because Ed worked in the limitations of those controls, he made levels that complemented those controls.
Okay.
And that's why they never change, because to change them would mean to effectively
change. Have to revisit all the other levels. Because, okay, so basically, part of the philosophy for the game almost was that, like, we kind of have to fix these controls at this, because everything we design from here on is going to be based on exactly what this is, not just sort of what this is.
Yeah, and that's okay. when I was doing the control stuff, I'm like, well, if we have to change these, this is going to suck, because it's just totally good. Because in the Goo game beforehand, I had to change controls all the time, because you're controlling, that's what Goo was, it was just controlling these big globs of stuff, and you tried to envelop other globs of stuff. And that, as a control scheme on a controller, is terrible.
Okay.
So a lot of the time I had to try to redesign controls, and every time I did, I'm like, yeah, this is a little better, but I don't like it. So in Meat Boy, I'm like, well, this is pretty cut and dry. He has to wall jump, he has to jump, he has to run. These need to be right first, and then we can build on that. And then, as long as the levels are good, the controls will remain good.
Okay. So just want to ask, I think we've got time, I just want to make sure I'm not ready. Yeah, okay, we've got a few more minutes.
All right.
So one final question on the controls is, so the controls you said were digital.
Mm-hmm.
Why not analog?
Why not? I didn't like the way it felt.
So you did try.
Yeah, I had a thing where, well, it didn't make much sense for the game, because Meat Boy is like, he's either, well, I mean, you have the run button, but that was the point. You have the run button, you're usually always running. You're only going these two speeds. There's only like a few places where you have to walk. You know, there's like, I think, one level in Cotton Alley where you absolutely have to walk. Every other time, you can run.
Okay.
So, I lost my train of thought again.
Did you try analog or digital?
Oh, that's right. Yes.
Why did you decide digital was the
because
better
it's
option or
the analog
option?
Because I never took and played the game in a way where I was thinking, oh, I want to be able to lightly move. Like,
okay.
I want to have this range of speeds. Like,
okay.
It was always, I either want to walk or I want to run. And that's
okay.
one and zero, you know?
Okay.
So, like, and when I had, like, this, I had a sort of thing where, like, he would accelerate, and you could adjust the control to make him, like, move a little bit faster, a little bit slower than his top speed, and it felt weird.
Okay.
And it didn't work in the air either, because that also felt strange to have something that needed to be fast-paced to actually have this sort of artificial ramp up for no reason.
So in some sense, you would say that the sort of the feel of Meat Boy was supposed to be instant on, instant off. It's like that's like I'm firing the thruster or I'm not.
Yes.
And it's not about like getting this subtle sort of like I just get a little more Lunar Landery or whatever.
Yeah,
It's like okay.
Yeah, right, it's all about just stop and go.
But it was something that you played around with at some point.
Yeah, very early. I think I scrapped it in the first week. I'm like,
So out of 3 months, 1 week was analog, and you're like, nope,
1 week
digital.
Was like, I don't like this.
All right.
This isn't any good. So.
All right, so we got a few minutes left, just a few minutes left, so I guess I'll close by saying, do you have anything you want to tell us about what you're doing these days? Not necessarily game stuff, since that's probably under wraps, but like, You, for example, told us that you rewrote how you were doing all your importer stuff. Like, any programming stuff I wouldn't know about, because I don't know what you're working on yet, that you might want to talk about or just mention based on sort of what we've talked about so far.
So I'm making a testing tool.
A testing tool?
Yeah. I had a terrible experience when Meat Boy launched on PC.
Okay.
And I wanted to make sure I never had that again. So I'm making like this weird crowdsource testing tool thing. I've been working on it for a while. I have it.
Tell me, the Meat Boy experience on PC was just that since there's so many platforms and graphics cards, like that kind of testing experience? Or tell me a little bit about what you mean.
So when we were doing Meat Boy was going to be Wii and Xbox. Okay. It wasn't going to be PC.
Okay.
Because the whole time I'm thinking, fuck PC. And not in the, but in the, that's a huge range of like, this graphics card, this graphics card, this, you know, when it came out on Steam, there was this awesome bug that sometimes it would just flicker for people. I'd be like, oh, you need VSync. They put on VSync. No, it was a program called Lux that would adjust the gamma.
That thing.
And it would make him stutter. And I'm like, well, did you, why?
Just, wow, okay. No. I know the program you're talking about, like adjust the screen settings to your outside lighting condition or something weird like this.
Yeah, something weird like that. And it happened to like 5 or 6 people. And I was like,
gamers never see the outside. Yeah. Why would they need this utility?
They don't need this.
What is this utility running on their machines for? It's ridiculous.
Yeah. So I was.
Just check for that app at startup and don't launch it. Yeah. You don't deserve to play
Dear Meat Boy. Sir. Yeah. So it was just going to be on Xbox and Wii because everybody's Xbox is the same, everybody's Wii is the same, and I'm one dude, and I'm like, I don't want to deal with all this stuff. But around that time, Steam was also, like when we first started Meat Boy, Steam was like,
starting to come
oh,
up,
cool,
yeah.
Audio Surf. And it was like, that's neat, and then nothing else. But then around mid-2010, they're like, oh, hey, we're awesome, and we're better than everybody else.
Okay.
So after like around July of 2010, we're like, all right, it has to come out on PC. So it come out on Xbox, and then a month later, it comes out on Steam. And I bought like a whole bunch of computers, and I tested it. And I'm like, okay, this is about the specs. And then it comes out on Steam, and it breaks for everybody. And I'm like, how did this happen? Yeah. And it was three or four days. No, it was 3 days, and I issued 18 patches in 3 days.
Wow.
And
all for system config.
Yeah, all for these like little things. And it was stupid stuff because like it was whenever you have problems like that, it's always assumption. It's always, oh, this is definitely gonna do this.
Right.
And on consoles, you can assume all kinds of stuff.
Right.
But on PCs, you can't assume anything.
Right, because the one you tested on is roughly the same as the one it's gonna ship on, so although I guess maybe that gets less true over time, because they're like, oh, the dashboard might have a Fritos information for you that you need.
Do you wanna buy a Mazda 3?
Yeah,
cool!
Maybe you do, in the middle of this jump.
Yeah.
But yes, for the most part, you can kind of count on them to be like, this hardware is the same as the hardware you have for the most part, or whatever.
And in my inexperience and my ignorance, I was like, well, I can assume that the graphics card's definitely, like, everybody's going to be able to run this, everybody's going to be able to run that, and no. So after that happened, I'm like, this could have easily been prevented, because I've also found throughout the years that fans are the people that want to test the most and will generally be the best testers.
Okay.
Like, we hired and we paid out, I think, through Microsoft, I think we paid out like $50,000 for testing for Xbox.
Okay.
And it was required by them, it's whatever.
Yeah.
But they missed stuff. And it was because they were just paid to do it.
Yeah, right.
Like, there were some definite fans, and I've met some testers that actually did test Meat Boy that were like super fans. But at the end of the day, they go home at 5.
Yeah.
You know, they come in at 8, they go home at 5, and they test all day, and they can miss stuff.
Yeah.
And they did tend to miss a lot of stuff, and we didn't actually have any testers for the PC version, which would have helped do some of this stuff. So my thinking was, there's a bunch of fans, I can make something that I can just send out builds to people, and they can test it, and then I can get all their information, and then I can issue stuff to specific people if they have problems.
So that sounds awesome.
Yeah, and I've integrated that into, because I rewrote Super Meat World, because I want it on PlayStation and Vita.
Okay.
That was the little level portal thing that, again, I'm dumb. And I'm naive. I don't know if it's dumb, it's naive.
Everyone's got to learn some, I mean, right?
Exactly.
Until you ship something, you can't know all the things that are going to go wrong.
So what I did is I made this Meet World level portal thing, and I just had it hooked to a MySQL database, because I'm like, it's free,
right.
Nobody's gonna fuck with it,
right.
And what happens Christmas Eve?
Right.
They, like, they take it and they fill it in with dumb developer. I'm like, oh, yeah, I am dumb. I am dumb to not trust the internet, not to be assholes. So that, like...
Isn't that what the internet's for? That's
yeah,
what we
it
do.
Is.
It's like a search engine
the
for,
dude,
for assholes.
One of the dudes even, like, emailed me beforehand, and I'm like, just don't mess with it. Please, just don't mess with it. Fucking asshole messed with it anyway. I couldn't fix it because I was at my parents' house for Christmas. I didn't have...
Aww.
I had a phone. What was I going to do? So when I got, like, I was able to, like, log into Telnet on my, like, or SSH into the server through my dad's computer,
oh,
and,
my
like,
God.
Lock down the database so nobody could write to it and restore a backup. But it was, like, it was so traumatizing because I'm like, I hate this. And it upset me. Like,
I can imagine.
Oh, man. I was, because...
Because it's a very personal thing when you ship a product, especially when you're, like, one or two people who make it. It's not,
yeah,
it's not
it's
like
not
a big
like
faceless
I have
thing.
Credit card numbers or anything. You're not... Yeah. I mean, you taught me a lesson, but it's a lesson you could have taught me without fucking up my Christmas. So,
Merry Christmas.
Yeah, Merry Christmas. So, that was like terrible, and it had 7,500 levels and 300 custom chapters in it. Like,
okay.
And it was up for about 10 months before somebody like messed with it. But yeah, so. Anyway, I've rewritten that because I wanted everything, and I've integrated it into the new Meat Boy code. It's actually in little beta testers right now, and they're like, it's getting all the
does
data.
Does it have a name?
Nichroma.
Nichroma?
Yeah.
What does that mean?
Kyle Pulver gave it to me. It's some Lovecraftian zombifying essence. And it just sounds awesome, so... Because originally, I thought it was going to be like a SETI at home kind of thing, where I could just... anonymously, like, I'm like, wait a minute, this might be Skynet eventually,
let's
not do that.
Yeah, everyone's got to avoid making the Terminator we're going to survive.
But the name's cool, so I kept the name.
Well, I think we're just about out of time.
Cool.
Thank you so much for talking with me. It's been
this was
pleasure.
Fun.
And I'm sure everyone out there appreciates it.